Lesson 10, page 39, talking about the mother in the home. I wrote a book about motherhood a couple of years ago. It's about 500 pages of blank pages. It's what I know about motherhood. We've been talking about the family. Talked about the husband and the wife last class on Sunday morning, talking about the fathers. And tonight we come to the mother in the home. And our text for the class is Titus chapter 2. Now, before turning there, or if you have, that's okay. If I was going to say to you that coming this Sunday morning, I am going to present a lesson on sound doctrine, what do you think I would be preaching about?
The Bible.
The Bible, absolutely. Boy, we're going to get the Bible out there. We're going to open it up, and we're going to... What are some lessons that you would want to hear about sound doctrine? What's a good lesson? Gospel plan of salvation. That's a good one. That's good sound doctrine.
Lord's Supper.
Lord's Supper. Yeah. Organization of the church, authority, leadership, all those kind of things. But if I told you that, well, Sunday morning, we're not going to talk about sound doctrine. We're going to talk about women teaching young women. You would think, well, that's a different subject. Titus chapter 2, verse 1, as we have it. Paul is writing to a preacher and giving him instructions about things that have to do with the church. And this is what Paul says in Titus chapter 2 and in verse 1. But as for you, speak the things which are proper for what? Sound doctrine. What comes next? Well, this is sound doctrine. And so I'm not, but I don't know, I might. If I was going to do a sermon on Sunday morning and say it's going to be about sound doctrine, what I could do is say, older men need to be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, and love and patience. And verse 3, that older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded and in all things showing yourself, speaking of Titus, to be a pattern of good works and doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, and incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Folks, that's sound doctrine. But we don't always equate sound doctrine to familial relationships, but what Paul says is sound doctrine is that we need to be teaching men and women to be teaching younger men and younger women. Why is that sound doctrine? Why does Paul call that sound doctrine?
Every generation is the future of the church. The church is only as strong as its foundation.
Yeah, I mean, we need to teach about the Lord's Supper. We need to teach about authority. We need to teach about the plan of salvation. All those things are integral foundations. But teaching young people to be servants of God, that's the foundation of the church. That's why the church needs sound doctrine to be included in this idea of family and husbands and wives creating marriages that please God and fathers and mothers creating homes where children are raised in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's sound doctrine because that's what's going to really make the church a strong place to be. And so that's why Paul calls that sound doctrine and includes that in the necessities. And so when we talk about the work of the church, one of the things that we need to emphasize a lot on, which is what we've been doing here in this study, is about the things that need to be going on with the family. I like what Thomas Jefferson said about motherhood. It is the keystone of the arch of matrimonial happiness because motherhood is this place in the home that holds everything together. And it is such an integral part of that. I do have to say that, what is the question? What is the joy of motherhood?
When all the kids have gone to bed.
There you go. Okay. Somebody's got, when all the kids have gone to bed, that's the joy of motherhood. That's when, you know, I just put that quote in there just to get to do that. But The mother's role is central. Now, we talked Sunday about the father being the leadership, and he is. And the man needs to take the leadership role, needs to take the responsibility, do exactly what, you know, and lead the family. But that does not diminish or distinguish or less, you know, lessen what the woman does. It doesn't suggest that it's all on him, and it doesn't suggest it's all on her, but everybody has their particular roles. But the woman's place is a central theme for the happiness of the home and the spirit of love that permeates there. And she is an integral part of that. And to prove that, of how important she is, if you're ever watching, for example, a football game, and this could be even in the NFL or something like that, and somebody makes a great play, at least they used to do this anymore, they would put the camera on the player and they said, hey, and what would he always say? Hi, Mom. Mike, who's the one that spent endless hours teaching that boy how to throw the ball? Who's the one that taught that kid how to do the move? It wasn't Mama, it was Daddy. And so Daddy's been spending, 50 years of his life getting this boy ready to play football, and who does he think on live TV? Thank you, Mom, Well, we all do that because, moms are just that spirit, that special person. But the character of the mother, the grace of her bearing and nurturing children with tender care, and what's bonding? What does it mean?
Developing a very intimate relationship.
Yeah. Why is it important that when a child is born that there's an immediately connect physical between the child and the mother? It's called imprinting. Bonding.
Imprinting.
It's imprinting. And we all need that. We don't know that. But we all need that because every one of us came into the world the same way. We're little cute little babies, at least most of us. And I thought I'd just keep picking on him while I was at it. But we don't know anything. We don't even remember any of that. But we do remember the fact that we are imprinting, embedding, and bonding with our mother. And it's a very important part. That's an important integral part of that relationship, but the spiritual is so much more. Because it's one thing for the physicality of it all, but when we talk about the spiritual bonding, that's really one of the greatest works of a mother, is her voice needs to be a voice that soothes the baby. But her voice needs to be a voice as that child grows to be soothing them in the place of God, because she can affect those things. Her touch is very important to the child, but her touch of the Word of God is so much more important to build on that. And so she has a very, very integral place in the role of the child. Let's talk about Jesus for a moment. We don't know anything about Jesus' early life, really. We know when he was born. We know, 8 days. And generally, we know about when he was 2 years old. They went and lived in Egypt for a while, and then they moved back to Nazareth. Then we get a story when he's 12 years old, he's at the temple. And then the next part is when he's 30 years old. But it's when he's 12 years old that's important, because you remember when... what lousy parents they were. You left the Son of God? I mean, really? You lost him? Has anybody ever here been left at church?
My brother.
And why did you do that exactly? I mean, did you do that or
my mom?
Yeah, I was. And I was I was young enough that... Anybody here ever remember Morris Norman by chance? Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, I came home in their car, and I was in the back window of their car. This is in the early 60s, 1960, not 18. And I remember they left me. Of course, there were six of us, so I don't blame them. But Joseph and Mary lost Jesus, and they didn't know it for a while, and it took them 3 days to find this kid. And so they find him, and, doing the old temple. But what's important about that, well, let's just go over here. Let's go to Luke. I'm saying that, and I should just show this to you. So here's the Son of God, and he's been in the temple, and he's been, amazing everybody because of his wisdom and so forth like that. But I want you to notice in Luke chapter 2, in verse 51, what is said about Jesus.
He's 12 years old. He's the Son of God. And he's, you know, kind of got his mom and dad a little upset because the fact that they couldn't find, took him 3 days. Can you imagine? Losing your child and not finding for three solid days. And so they finally find him. But what's really kind of neat about this passage in Luke chapter 2, verse 51, it says that when he went down with him and came to Nazareth and was subject to them. The Son of God was subject to his mother and father. Why was Jesus subject to his mother and father?
They were his parents.
And he had that special relationship because, you know, if you look back in verse 50, but they did not understand the statement which he spoke to them. And so, you know, that's there. Go back to verse 34. This is when Simeon is blessing Mary. Luke 2, verse 34, Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, behold, this child is destined for the fall and rising of many in Israel and for a sign which will be spoken against. Verse 35 is just totally amazing. Yes, a sword will pierce through your own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. What has Simeon just told Mary? I'm sorry? Yeah, I mean, there's things that are going to happen to Jesus that are going to rip her soul out, just anguish her. And for 30 years, it, you know, of course, when Jesus was born and she finds out that the government wants to come kill your child, that's kind of upsetting. You know. But, you know, for 30 years, but I mean, she followed him around. What I'm leading up to me, one of the greatest, to me, the greatest story of motherhood is found when Jesus is on the cross. How important is it for Jesus to be on the cross? I mean, the world is hanging at a balance here. I mean, if Jesus doesn't die on the cross, I mean, we're all in a bunch of trouble. So here's Jesus, and he's on the cross, and he's dying, and he's suffering, and the whole world, I mean, eternity and the whole thing and the scheme of redemption and the plan of God. And he stops everything as if it was. He just stops it all. He just, okay, wait just a minute. Because right down here underneath where he's at, and he's not very high off the ground, but he's looking, who is there?
Mary
and John, his mother, John the apostle, and some other women. I'm getting off. How much time have I got? I gotta quit this. This is, sorry, 15 after, and I'm way behind. Who knew beyond any shadow of doubt that Jesus was the Son of God?
Mary.
Virgin birth, obviously had that. What did she say to people at the cross when they were killing her son? Nothing. Wow. But what I'm getting to, and I got to get beyond it, is that Jesus stops and looks down at his mother and says, Mom, I love you. Thank you. Well, it wasn't exactly those words. What he said was, if you look down in John 19, this is actually on page 39, the third paragraph. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, Woman, behold your son. And he said to the disciple, Behold your mother. And from that hour, that disciple took her to his home. You know what Jesus says about motherhood? Wow. Thank you for taking care of me. But he knew, because Joseph had apparently died before Jesus began his ministry. So Mary's, you know, she doesn't have a husband. She's got four sons and some daughters, but here's Jesus. And he basically says, thank you, Mom. I love you. And he looks over at John and says, would you please take care of my mother? And John says, I got it. And so he does. And that's just one of the beautiful pictures. But the thing that I find about that is that when Jesus was learning as a child, he didn't learn all that just because he was the Son of God. Who taught him about God? His mother and his father, Joseph.
But she had an integral part in his life to form what kind of a character he was, because she influenced him and she taught him. I think it's interesting in the Proverbs that it talks about the instructions of the father, but the law of the mother. Because when mama speaks, the law gets laid down. You know what I'm saying? And the proverb says it over and over again. Okay, the fathers instruct, but the mamas, they lay the law down. Well, that's because the influence of the mother in the home is so great. Obviously, with Timothy, who are the influences in his home?
Grandma.
Yeah, two women, a mother and a grandmother, Lois and Eunice. And so that's important, to do. And back in our text of Titus chapter 2, which is a large part of what we're going to talk about tonight, the thing that we learn about motherhood is that it is an individual accountability, responsibility, things that they have to do. Because remember that what Paul is telling Titus to do is that he needs to, we're back in Titus chapter 2 and verse 2, older men, they've got to have a certain character. But look at verse 3, the women need to have a certain character. They've got to be these kind of people first. Because if mothers are not, verse 3, first, they can't do anything after that. But the admonition is that they have a certain character about them, and that verse 4, mine says that they admonish. What is your, does anybody look, have another version? Yeah, okay. New King James is admonished. Anybody got an American Standard?
I think it says instruct.
Instruct, yeah. Anybody got ESV?
What verse is that?
Verse 4, that they admonish the young women.
Training.
Yeah, training, okay. That's what the women, the older women are supposed to be teaching the younger women, and guess what the younger women are supposed to be doing? They ought to be learning. They ought to be learning, because that's what's going to make sound doctrine. The older women show their character through their reverent behavior, and they teach the younger women how to do all these things, and the younger women listen to the older women, and they learn from the older women because they want to learn how to do these things. And so that's why this is very important to do.
And one thing in that century, there was no formula. So moms were breastfeeding until they could eat solid foods.
Right.
So they were imprinting that much longer compared to today.
Yeah, I mean, and even today and culturally in many places still, but yeah, the cultural norms of that day, it was a very different relationship between the moms and the children and what they were able to do and when they weaned them and when they did all, it was a very much of a bonding. We're kind of talking about this today, but I think that one of the problems that we have in our society is that we don't bond with anybody. We don't bond as a family. We don't bond with our neighbors. We don't bond with anybody. And what the family needs is this bonding that goes along, and particularly in Titus chapter 2. Let me get to the questions real quick, because I want to get to Titus 2 to make some points out of here. Who's the oldest mother in the Bible? And the oldest grandmother?
Eve.
All right, who else is one of the oldest grandmothers in the Bible? Noah's wife. I got some bad news, by the way. You don't want to hear this, Jerry, I know. I'm related to every one of you.
Nobody.
Yeah. Even weird people. Yeah, we're all related. We all come from Adam. We all come from Ham, Shem, or Japheth, so it's, we sort of started all over again. And so, that's kind of cool. And we talked bad about Cain for good reason. Why did Eve call her first son Cain?
She was raising Cain.
She was raising Cain, yes. And they raised Cain, yeah. In Genesis chapter 4 and verse 1, how did Eve view motherhood?
This child came from
God. Yeah. This child came from God. That's and what's amazing about that is that would make three people in the world. Adam and Eve and Cain.
But she knew, and she didn't have any books to read, she knew this child came from God. And she understood the role that she had, and that the parents, you know, that motherhood should be treasured in that way, because she knew that her child was a gift from God. We talked before about in Exodus the fact that even in the Ten Commandments, what was the Ten Commandments say about motherhood? You better honor them. You better respect them. You better show them reverence and those kinds of things. Yeah, because otherwise you're going to die. Yeah, which is the old law. And there's a couple of points there. Questions 4 and 5, we talked about those before. That let me go back here. There was Leviticus 19. There's a phrase that is interesting how it's used. This is question 5A. Yeah. All right, so question 5A, Leviticus 19, verse 3. He says, every one of you shall revere his father and mother and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. I don't want you to miss that language. How important was the Sabbath to the Jews? What happened if you picked up sticks on the Sabbath day? You died. You died, because that's actually what happened. So we know how holy the Sabbath day was, but I want you to see that coupled with that declaration of the Sabbath, he also begins with saying that you will revere your father and mother. Those two are the same. The day of Sabbath is very holy. Revering mom and dad is very holy too. Those are not two separate things. Those are the singular. That's how God views them. I mean, there's some things that, yeah, you know, this is serious, this one's not. No, these two are serious. And any time, and he says it a lot, actually, any time he says, I am the Lord your God, what has he just done? You know, in a movie when something exciting happens and you got the guy with the cymbals back there in the back, you know, and you're all like, ah. This is God when he says, you shall revere mother and father and you shall keep the Sabbath day. You better do it.
Mic drop.
No, it's not even a mic drop. No, I'm talking loud noise. Loud noise. Glad he was never in band. Can I just drop the mic? No. So anyway, that just shows that the Sabbath was holy, but that's the way that God, you know, took care of that. Down to question 8, Proverbs 31. Where did King Lemuel get all this, you know, the virtuous woman? Who can find a virtuous woman? Her worth is far above rubies, which means you got to buy her rubies and diamonds. I'm trying to help the ladies out there. Who told him that? Yeah. These are not actually the words of King Lemuel. Proverbs was written by Solomon. Proverbs 30 was written by a guy by the name of Agur. But Proverbs 31 was written by King Lemuel as his mother taught him. We got to give credit to King Lemuel's mother, okay? Give the woman her due. But she's the one who talked about the godly mother being of greater value, the one who fears and honors God. And so that's important to do. Okay, so let's go to page 42. Any thoughts on the questions? We've talked about some of this before, but on page, any thoughts or questions on what we've not covered? Some of that we've already gone over. Okay, let's go to question 13. What is sound doctrine? You know what that is. So let's talk about what each one of these mean. So Titus 2, sound doctrine, necessary things, commandments. God has said, this is what I want you to teach for proper sound doctrine. In verse 4, what does he want the older women to teach the younger women?
Love their husbands, love their children.
Okay, two parts. Why does an older woman need to teach a younger woman to love her husband? I thought that when two people marry, they're in love and it's all giddy and you don't have to teach me nothing because I just think he's the cutest thing since whatever.
And I just love him so much, and she's the most beautiful thing. I mean, whatever. Why does God tell older women to teach younger women to love their husbands?
Because they've gone through the marriage. They've gone through all the different aspects and have had ups, downs.
You mean they've had experience and they understand things? Wow. Okay.
Hard to live with?
Huh?
We as husbands are hard to live with?
Yes, you are. The thing that we're missing, and part of it is a cultural thing. Let me just go ahead and get in trouble here. A lot of what we find in Titus 2 is a cultural problem. And this may surprise you, but we live in a culture where when people get married, they fall in love and they can't live without one another and they marry. In many places, and particularly in Bible times, that didn't happen. Arranged marriage. What's an arranged marriage? Parents say, you and you together, there it is. Now, what that means is that you get married and you're not in love with one another necessarily like we think of. But what happens is that you learn to love one another. The Orientals define it by this way. It's like you have a stove and you have a pot. In the Western culture, you take a pot of boiling water and you put it on the coal stove. What's going to happen to the pot of boiling water? It's going to eventually go out. The other thing is that you take a pot of cold water and you put it on a hot stove and it increases. What that shows is that the cultural difference between the Western of, which I'm thankful for, by the way, the Western view of marriage is that you fall in love, you have all these things, and that happens a lot, and then you struggle through marriage. Whereas if you're in an arranged marriage where you just marry somebody, you have to learn. Marriage is a learning process. And now both of those go hand in hand, that even for the, you know, Western culture where we fall in love, and then guess what? We still need to learn how to love one another. We have this mistaken idea that we're just so much in love, we don't need to do anything. That's nonsense. Now, there's all kind of different kind of loves. I call that the puppy love. The puppy love should never, ever, ever, never, ever stop. You have to develop that. That's always got to be there. But when life comes in, and when work comes in, and when children come in, and when the world comes in, you've got to learn how to love. And so what the older women need to do is, by their experiences, they sit down with these younger women and they tell them, this is how you love your husband. And it's a learning process that you need to learn how to put up with his little silly stuff. And you need to learn how to train him better, you know. You've got to learn how to, it's a teaching model. It's like children. You think, okay, children come into the world, we're just going to automatically love them. Well, we do, but there's times that we don't love our children. You know. But we have to be taught how to love our children. And so what the older women are doing is they're sitting down with the younger women and they're showing them through their experiences and knowledge, this is what's going to help you. Now, they don't have all the answers. God is not saying that older women have all the answers, no more than older men do. But they do know a whole lot more than a 20-year-old. And so there's this teaching process that's got to go through. And that's what needs to be done. And let's face it, this is an easy question with an easy answer. Where do you see that happening today in our society? Where do you see that happening in the church? It's not. And sidebar, I think one of the failures of the church over the years is that we've gotten away from this. Number one, older women are scared to death for obvious reasons, and I'm including the men in this too, because the older women in verse 2, they've got to teach the younger men, and so the older men need to be teaching the younger men. There need to be classes where the older men are sitting instructing the younger men. But there also needs to be classes where the older women are teaching the younger women. That is not happening in the church Why? Why is it difficult for older women to teach the younger women? Bottom of the page. It's okay, we're all friends here.
It could be a multiple thing. You know, one, you have to set the example.
You got to set the example first.
So it's
yeah.
to be your foundation
right.
as the older women,
yes.
or even older men.
Right, yeah.
We live in a culture where young people don't want to listen.
Right.
Yeah,
and see, it's on both sides. Yeah.
And to all of what Angela was saying, unfortunately, our culture is even when I was a kid, places were closed on weekends.
Right.
You don't see that anymore.
Right.
It's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week world now.
Yeah.
Most women are working outside the home for at least a period of time.
Right.
And so those things contribute to it too.
Yeah. And the thing is that, I mean, it's on both sides, is that we don't have older women wanting to teach the younger women because they're scared to death. And yes, we have younger women who are absolutely horrified with the idea that they're going to be in a class with older women being told how to love their husbands and love their children. Well, the thing I don't understand is that if God tells us to do it, why don't we do it? Because on both sides of the coin, the older women need to have the courage and the faith to be able to go into a class and say to the younger women, this is some things, but the younger women need to be humble enough to say, I need to listen. But culturally, that has changed everything. But unfortunately, that is a cultural change that is wrong. And I'm not saying it's the end all of things that's going to solve all the problems, but I think that there will be a lot less troubles in marriages if this would happen. There's an old custom, or a story I've told of the old country back in the day, that a young couple were having a lot of problems in their marriage and so forth, and everybody knew it. And so one day, they heard a knock, and opened the door, and there was this older couple there, and they had luggage with them. And they said, what are you doing here? Well, we've come to live with you and help you solve your problems, and we're not leaving until we do. And that was a custom. I don't think they had a whole lot of problems, because there were... I don't know if they called them godparents or whatever they were, but if you were having marital problems, they would be showing up at your front door and they wouldn't leave until they got it. It's older teaching younger and younger listening to the older. And so it's both sides of the street. And that's what he says here. You've got to, loving your husband is something you've got to learn. Isn't it a shame the women can't say amen? Loving your children is something that's got to be learned. And it's the older willing to teach, the younger willing to be this. But look what else is, you know, this whole thing about teaching the older women to teach the younger women. They need to teach them to be discreet, to be sober-minded, to be self-controlled, to be sensible, to be chaste, to be pure, to be homemakers and workers at home, to be good and kind. Here's another one down in verse 5. Wow, obedient to their own husbands. Well, that goes back to the submission thing. If a woman denies submission, she is denying the word of God. God tells women to be submissive to their own husbands. Husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. But see, these are the things that the older women are admonishing the younger women to do.
Can I
yes, ma'am.
Just say one thing, too? I think we as older women need to also develop relationships with those younger women.
Yes.
Because if we come along, we have no relationship with them whatsoever.
Yeah.
And all they hear from us is criticism of what they're doing or not doing. It's just not going to go well.
Yeah, great points. One of the things that we cannot do, and it's easy to do, it's easy to criticize and say, well, I don't know, boy, look at them parental skills and marriage things. I mean, it's easy to criticize. But that's why when you begin with verse 1, we're talking about sound doctrine. This is why this is a work of the church. This is what we're supposed to be doing. As much as taking the Lord's Supper and singing the right songs and doing whatever. The Lakeland Hills congregation needs to be a congregation where we are people that are engaged with one another and that we are involved with other people's lives. Now, there may be some young people, men or women, they may not have that home environment. But we take it upon ourselves to be that home environment for them. But it's part of the relationship that we have that we recognize that there are people that need this. And we may take them off to the side and say, listen, let's get together for some coffee and whatever, and let's talk about some things. It's building relationships. And within a congregation, which is what we're talking about, but within a congregation, we need to build relationships with one another that we know one another. Men need to take young men and say, hey, let's go do some talking. You know, if you want to go fishing, that's fine, but talk about the spiritual things. And women need to be engaged with young women. And don't have that wall of separation and say, well, no, you know, I'm an older woman, so I'm retired. No, you're not. There's nothing wrong with being retired in this world, but you never retire from the work of the church, ever, until you die. And that's what needs to be done, is that there needs to be developing relationships. And granted, younger people need to be willing. Why not? With the experience and things, it may not be that you take all of the, you know, advice and saying, but you're learning and appreciating what other people. I grew up with mentors in Plant City. I can tell you, one of them just died about a couple of weeks ago, Nancy Perkins. There are people that I can take a list off. They were my mentors growing up. I didn't know my grandparents, but I had a pile of them at church. And that's where this idea of motherhood comes into play, when older women are helping the younger women understand what life is all about. It would make their life so much easier. Getting together and talking about things, finding ways. And so you may have to move out of your comfort zone and kind of move across the aisle and say, hey, you know, I would love to help you, and is there anything I can do? You know, whatever. Those kinds of things. And while we can say it, God, men, that's our role too. We got to grab younger men, you know, and be an instruction to them and spend time with them, because that's the work of the church. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And it's difficult in our days. We've got to get beyond those things because we're scared to death of one another. And sure, I could make a statement, okay, younger people don't want to listen to what older people do. That's really kind of a shame. Yeah. Right.
It's because the relationships were never there. They miss it. You tell them, yeah, you can't be a part of this, and they're like, okay, well, whatever. Yeah. Well, I don't have a place to sit for an hour on Sunday.
Yeah. Hey, you know what's it? Did you know that, see this finger here? This is my pinky. Do you know that I have a relationship with that pinky? You know why? Because it's attached. Because it's part of me. And if it gets hit, buddy, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to scream like a girl. I'm going to be, that hurts so bad. That's because it's attached. And what we need to do is we need to be attached. We need to be joined to one another, which is what Jesus tells us to do, what Paul tells us to do as well. Gary, you were going to say.
Yeah, one thing I think is interesting in this passage is the word for love is the filial love,
right,
not the agape.
Right.
It's the emotional, affectionate love.
Right.
And you get married and you get where two or three children come along and you're living paycheck to paycheck. And
right.
Working two jobs and the stress of the family,
he
still needs
to
love.
Love has still got to be there. And a lot of that has to be coming from energy and learning, because it's easy just to say, well, we're just in love and it's going to... No, sometimes love takes a lot of effort because you got so many things going on, working two jobs and doing all of those things. So that's an important part of the phileo kind of love that is there. So, all right, thanks for the great class tonight. And Lesson 11, Sunday morning.